to Close It Now, the podcast that's revolutionizing the HVAC and home improvement trades industries. Get ready to dive deep into the world of heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. We're turning up the heat on industry standards and cooling down misconceptions. And we're not just talking about fixing vents and adjusting thermostats. It's about the transformative movement that's reshaping the very foundation of HVAC and home improvement. We're the driving force inspiring top performers who crave excellence, not only in their professional endeavors, but also in fitness, nutrition, relationships, and personal growth. Proving that we can indeed have it all. This is Close It Now, where excellence meets excitement. Let's get to work. Now your host, Sam Wakefield.
Well, all right, everybody, welcome back to Close It Now. Sam Wakefield here. I am stoked to have these guests on today. I don't do a multi-person guest very often, but when we do, you know it's going to be fire and it's going to be worth it. So today we are talking about a hot topic, so to speak, in the industry. you'll understand what that means here in just a minute. Date of recording is June 29th, 2026. And so I'm excited to have these gentlemen on. Let's make sure I'm saying your names correctly. Les Reinhardt and Adam Dykstra.
That's right.
Was there anywhere close in this? Not related to Lenny, are you?
That rehearsal that paid off.
No, exactly. No relation to Lenny. No baseball people in my family. We're the yay sport group over here.
Oh, too bad. Yeah, I get asked if I'm related to Tim Wakefield all the time for pitching for the Pirates, right? I'm knuckleball pitcher. So I get it.
Nice.
Well, welcome to the show, guys. Happy to have y'all on. So let's get started a little bit fun. What is the, I'm going to actually borrow a, because I know you guys have been in the industry for a long time. What is the, so I'm borrowing a reading off the page from my friend Everett that runs those In This House podcast. So shout out to him. If you haven't been on his show, I'm going to recommend you get on his show as well, because I think this is a topic that everyone should hear. But before we get to that, I would love to hear from each of you. What is one of the craziest or wildest experiences that you have had, that story that just sticks in your brain and lives rent-free from your time in the industry? It can be a homeowner experience, could be working with another contractor, or just something absolutely off the wall that you've come across.
Sure. Go for it, Les.
Me first? All right.
He's grinning like he's already got it loaded, ready to go.
Yeah, I heard what direction we're going on crazy. I'm like, I'm not talking about that one. I'm not talking about that one. I'm basically eliminating stuff as you're going towards.
What's the rating on this show, right? Decide what to talk about.
Yeah, there's some. Yeah, just let's not go there. But long time ago, I was working with a contractor. I was in his shop. I was emptying his recovery tanks and, handling his refrigerant and stuff. And he started complaining to me about this guy owned a house, and he had called up and he had put a new system in, and he went through all the stuff about, and he called up and goes, "Hey man, it's not working." He goes, "What do you mean it's not working? Like the air is not blowing." He's like, "What do you mean it's not blowing, or it's not blowing cold?" "No, it's not blowing." So he goes over, filters are just caked, right? So mm-hmm. He goes, "Hey, you have to change these, right? Otherwise it's going to affect, you can't get air through." So about, I don't know, 10, 12 months later, the guy calls back. It's not blowing again. He goes, "Have you changed your filter?" He goes, "Oh, no, dude, they had to be changed so frequently that I just left them out." I got tired of changing them. And he's like, "Well, that's going to be a problem."
Well, get out your wallet.
And I just remember the contract, he was so irritated, right? Like I told, I don't even understand.
I have to change them so often. I just quit doing it.
Yeah. So that's one that comes up and I talk about every now and then, just because it's always stuck with me.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. I love it. Adam, you got a fun one to add to the pod here?
Yeah. We, Les and I, in our former lives, we ran a company called Rapid Recovery, which I'm guessing a good chunk of your audience has heard of. It's at this point, the world's largest refrigerant recovery company. And so we started that back in 2002. And of course, we started like any other entrepreneurial group. You're just out there hustling, doing the work, doing mm-hmm. everything, right? Doing the paperwork at night, doing the recoveries by day, you know, it's a superhero status. And at one point, I had gone over to Maryland and had to do a recovery on Skillman Village, which is an insane asylum in New Jersey. And so this place had been shut down for decades. And it had, you know, what happens in a facility like that out in the middle of nowhere, you know,
horror movies after a place
yes.
like this. Right?
Yeah. So I'm in there and there's no power. And it's all boarded up and people have been breaking into it for years and doing weird cult things or who knows, but there's like, you know, everything you can imagine painted on the walls. And I'm walking around in this place and it's creepy. The weeds outside are 3 feet tall and, you know, there's ticks everywhere. So you're trying to not to walk where you don't want to. Yeah. You know, I'm walking down these hallways and I come around a corner and I'm headed into what it turns out was the morgue. And so there's a bloody handprint on the wall and it smears all the way down the wall. And I'm in the basement of this pitch black building with my flashlight, my headlamp. And I'm like, nope, not doing it, not going in here. Turning around, I'm going out. So yeah, that was the scariest recovery I've ever done. Of course, you get your own head because you're there from, you know, I was trying to get it done quick. So I was there from 6 a.m. to like 8 p.m. one day and then had to go back and just finish up the next day. But I was, you know, it's 8 o'clock at night. And that's like, nope, that's the end of today. I'm done. I'm walking out right now. It's dark outside. I'm a pansy. I yield. Yeah,
let's go back in the daylight with another person or two to make sure that
change together.
I will say demolition jobs were the, like, you never knew, right? Like, yeah. I'll throw one more. You go through them and sometimes the local police departments are using them for training and stuff. So you're walking through this building, no power, empty. You're there by yourself. It might be, you know, 2 million, 3 million square feet, but you're going through admin offices. All of a sudden you walk in and there's these bodies that like outlines of people where they use for training, right? And you're like, you're walking in with your flashlight and there's like this Bob target there, right? So demo man, you never knew what you were going
to
walk
like,
into.
It feels like
what
the opening scene to, was it the old Blade movie where the body's hanging along in the meat locker?
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh, that's hilarious. Scary. Oh, I love it, guys. Well, let's, so you referenced rapid recovery. So let's talk about that. That's actually, it's really fun. It's a service that one of the companies I was with over the years, we actually used your company years ago. So that's fun. So I have a little bit of firsthand experience there, but let's rewind a little bit. So I would like to hear a little bit of the highlight reel, but how'd you guys come together and take us through that journey and then, you know, land the plane on where we are now and why this is an important conversation for today?
Sure. You want to go all the way back to talk about Rich with RMS and then transition?
Yeah. I mean, that's where I met you. I was like in high school at the time.
Yep. That's right.
I love it. I thought you were going to go.
Go ahead.
Yeah. We met in the mid 90s and Les had come on board to a company my uncle had owned called Refrigerant Management Services. And it was basically like a Snap-on tool truck that picked up refrigerant, recovered refrigerant, emptied cylinders, got rid of disposables, sold refrigerant back to the contractors, mm-hmm. Sold other things too. But that was the gist of it. It was basically like a mobile recovery/reclaim truck. And so we both started working there. Les was in the route sales side and I was driving a recovery truck, going out to landfills or chillers. One day you're at the landfill doing white goods, hoping they don't split open, leaving you with all their lovely interior of death. Mm-hmm. And the next day you're doing a chiller and on the top of a high rise or something. So we met there and then that company was sold and purchased by a publicly traded company. They basically ended up doing a .com thing and ended up going out of business. So Les and Rich and I, Rich was the founder of that company, started Rapid Recovery in 2002 and really focused on that service level of, look, this is a slow process for most people and it's not getting done all too often and, you know, refrigerant's getting vented. And there's value here for these, particularly for larger systems, but even for cylinders and small systems. But like there's value in the refrigerant and there's value in time savings. If you're going to sit there for 3 days trying to recover a bunch of units on a rooftop that have to be replaced, you can have subcontract that out and have it done in hours. So that was the vision of that. We did that together for, oh, I don't know, till 2016, sold that to Agas. I spent the next couple of years traveling the world, launching it globally, stayed in the States and continue to work on expanding here in the U.S. stateside. And then we both left in 2019, 2020. And from there we said, hey, let's focus on an aspect of this business that while we did a good job of at Rapid Recovery, our clients, that's only a piece of the pie. And so Les, why don't you go through that side of it?
Yeah. So
real quick in this handover, I'm going to pop in here super quick for everybody listening, because we have a lot of people that listen in a whole bunch of different trades. So this episode is going to revolve, for everybody listening, is going to revolve around what happens in, and it's not strictly HVAC, because a lot of you that listen, you do appliance repair. A lot of you there's a lot of auto and mechanics and things in this station as well that are going to be listening. And for the rest of you, you might not directly handle refrigerant, but you do work alongside so many people that do. So this is, I want y'all to listen through a couple lenses. One is through the lens of, you know, how does this directly affect organizations? But the second lens I'd like everybody to listen to is, you know, one of the principles here at Close It Now is how do we leave things better than we found it? That's mm-hmm. one of the ways, you know, that I talk to everybody often is how we actually, everybody says in sales, you have to show value. Well, this is how you show value. Nobody ever tells you how to do it. How to do it is leaving things better than you find them. And this is one of the biggest pieces that's being missed and has been missed for, well, decades, really, if not years. And so pay close attention, because there's a big opportunity to improve the value that you, for everybody listening, the value you can bring to your clients through the understanding of what we're about to go through in this conversation. And then if you're not directly responsible, but you know someone who is, pass this episode forward to them, because there's a huge opportunity for them to be able to improve the processes of your organization in a way that is cost effective. And also, you don't want to get in trouble with anybody, with your regulation in, you know, entities either. So with that little blurb, go ahead and pick it up where you were at, Les.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, like Adam said, in 2002, after the other company, you know, failed, they did their .com stuff and lost it, we sat down and said, okay, where do we go from here? And we really saw that there's still this need, right? We don't want to leave a vacuum. Let's just start over and just get it going. So Rapid Recovery was, as Adam said, it's a service-based business. And through that service, by focusing on the service, we end up handling the refrigerant, right? Some people would have us leave it on site so they could put it back in after repair. Some people we hauled it away for. Contractors found that they could go back to getting 4 compressor changeouts a day instead of 2, right? Because we were just so efficient and fast and helped them in that category. But as we went through, we worked with maritime, Department of Defense, demolition, air conditioning contractors, building owners. And so we got to scrap yards. And so while it's all one HVACR industry, they all don't understand how the others operate. And we had a very nuanced look into the industry and where the gaps are and why documentation never worked.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
It's very siloed, right?
Yeah. They're all siloed. That's exactly right. So, so we, by getting that view, after we sold, like Adam said, we sat down and said, okay, can we solve it? Yeah, we believe we can. And even as we started in, we're like, oh, in order to solve it, we're going to have to track cylinders. We're going to be able to have cylinders in inventory and then know what techs put in there and what techs didn't, right? What came back out? Did they put it in and put it back in?
And that's a little bit. So when you say solve it, get a little clearer on what exactly it is we are solving, because I feel like we brushed past that fairly quickly here.
Yeah, so there's a requirement to record, document, and keep on record refrigerant movements, right?
All of them. So, I mean, just to give real clarity, this is true on the recovery side, and we kind of glossed over this too, but one of the market segments we were hitting back in the day was auto salvage yards. So we would recover cars, like lots and lots of cars, along with the white goods at the landfill. But the documentation side is a requirement from the time you purchase refrigerant. Where did it go? So in which appliance, which rooftop unit, which chiller, which grocery rack, whatever it is you're putting the gas into, it has to be tracked. Then the leftover that's in the bottom of that can, the heel that's left over, that pound, that 2 pounds that you're, that's still in the bottom that nobody wants to carry back up to the next unit just to use that little bit. Where did that go? Mm-hmm. And then when you recover refrigerant and you take it out of a system and put it into a recovery cylinder, where did it go? And to be fair, to be frank, if you're not recovering it, that every system that you're working on that has refrigerant in it, that you do a compressor change out or a condenser, you know, swap or whatever it might be, there's a regulatory burden to say what happened to the refrigerant in that system. And so by not doing it, you're effectively saying, I didn't do it. Ooh, so, okay. Yeah, it's a lot more detailed than I think people...
You still made a choice?
What's that?
Like the Rush lyrics, I think it's Tom Sawyer, by not making a choice, we've still made a choice.
That's right.
Yeah.
100%.
So I just wanted to jump in that's the solvent piece is all of those movements and making it really easy to do that part that nobody's really doing right now. You know, we were all taught to do it in trade school with a paper log, and that was the last time we ever looked at a paper log.
From the dozens and dozens of companies I've worked with across the country, I've never seen one.
Right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
And a lot of people focus on the recovery aspect of it, right? And we, if they were using rapid recovery, we solved that piece for them, but it didn't solve the rest of the puzzle for them. Yeah. Right? It didn't have that. So,
yeah, where's it go? Can we pull it out? We're going to put it back in, all the things.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there's a dollar associated with all that. If you're not doing a good job of tracking it and controlling your refrigerant, if you're throwing those disposables away with the heel in it, mm-hmm. that's a lot of money that you didn't, that you're just tossing.
Yeah.
4.3 million pounds a year, the EPA estimates, is lost to heel. Disposable heel, the gas left in a can after somebody throws it in the recycle bin. On average, they estimate it's 0.96, so 1 pound per, on average. I mean, when we used to recover these things all the time, you'd go in and some of these things would have 4, 5, 6 pounds in them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some of them have a lot. Some of them, people do a really good job and get right down to just vapor. And then hopefully they call somebody like Rapid, or they do it themselves, or they recover it. So, and there's more rules coming about that. We've done such a bad job as an industry. The EPA is making us write down more and more so that they can catch us when we're not doing it. Because right now they're, you know, because they're regulators.
All of the basic rules, the only way they can regulate is giving more rules, which nobody wants, but it's our own fault.
Yeah.
They have one method of enforcement, is the pen, mm-hmm. right? They just write more stuff in and then they pass that on to their enforcement division. But the regulators, they have a pen. So, okay, so where was I? We're back.
Before I interrupted you.
Thanks for the clarification on what it is we're actually solving. Honestly, being in HVAC for 20 years, I did not know. And I'm sure it was in my original EPA class forever ago.
Yep.
But I didn't know I was supposed to track the movement. All I knew is, hey, this is, you know, the basics. And hey, I passed and now I can actually work. Let's make some money. And
well,
that's it.
Yeah. To be fair, Sam, I mean, the original rules were don't vent it. Capture mm-hmm. it. And that means that's all of it. So don't vent it out of disposables has always been a rule. Just don't vent, right? So literally everything
was on how to turn somebody in if you find somebody else venting it so you can get your cash money for turning them in. That's literally huge part of the test.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, but that has changed. So in the late, that was really all it was in the up until really the end of the 2018, 2019. And the EPA cleaned up the rules a bunch to help bring clarity because there was a lot of finger pointing going on in the industry. Like, oh, it's my contractor's job to do it, not me as a technician. And the contractors would point at the technician and say, well, they're the certified product person. They have to do the documentation. That's not on me. And then all of them would point at the equipment owner and say, but the EPA says that they're the ones who are ultimately responsible. And that's not true either. They're mm-hmm. all, every one of those people is individually responsible and can be held liable. So they cleared that up. They didn't really change it as much as they said, yeah, we're not going to accept those excuses. So we're going to make it really clear.
Yeah. Just fix the language around it.
Yeah. Our saying is the who is you.
Who is you?
Who is you? Welcome to Whoville.
Who is you? So explain what you mean by that.
If you are involved in refrigerant anyway, touch it, you have refrigerated assets on your building, if any way, shape, or form, you are responsible to make sure refrigerant is managed and documented on its movements.
Got it.
So the EPA lays it out. It's like there's person, entity, government, tribe. Mm-hmm. Like it just goes through a whole litany. And if you work in the industry, you have a responsibility to make sure refrigerant within your purview or your circle is documented and accounted mm-hmm. for.
I love this because, you know, here we're all about doing things the correct way. You know, if integrity is doing the right thing when nobody's looking, and that's what we're all about. So let's take this one step further, because when someone, a different way to say that, let's twist the knife a little bit. What happens if we're not documenting and for some reason we get audited, then what? So let's talk about the potential consequences and the reason this is such a big deal, and then we can pivot over more into how you're solving it. I think that's really important that we discuss some of this, because, I mean, if there's no teeth, then yeah, so what?
Yeah. So I want to cover one thing, then we're going to move that. So I did a post today. Refrigerant's got no shelf life. Like it's good forever. As long as you get back to reclaim and reconstitute. So it is the best of the best practices. It's just about being a good steward of our resources, right? And it is the lifeblood mm-hmm. of refrigerated appliances. So no refrigerant, it doesn't work. Right? My body, if I start bleeding, I can stop it. But if I leave a lot, my body will reproduce blood and get it back up. Our refrigerated appliances systems, they don't do that. So once it's gone, it's gone. And when system stuff's not coming back in, then it gets lost. So now to your audit question, our friend Keely Whitman at Refrigerant Management Solutions, who started the Green Chill program with the EPA, she does a lot of consulting work. She says, once you're in an audit, you already lost. Like you've already lost once you get that paper. So like we go back to, we look at a very recent, the most expensive refrigerant action arguably that we know of is Kroger, $102.5 million, right? Ooh. And that went back to over, when did they start that in 14 to 23? Like it spanned that much of a time period, even though that's outside of what we see them saying is the required documentation period.
Yeah, right? The EPA says you have to retain records for 3 years. So apparently they had done spot audits, from what I've gathered now, back then. And so they were able to loop in the data they collected back then into a current enforcement action. I didn't know they could even do that. So they got smacked with fines for issues they did back in 2013, 2014, all the way up. And yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. And so today we calculated with they have a cost of an increase annually, right? So it's around $69,000, maybe $69,114. I think Adam would probably know the number exactly, but
$59,114. It's right at 69,114.
Okay. Right around 60,000, right? But Keely did the math, and I was just on a training with her the other day, and it's $124,000 per day per violation. $124,000 plus per day per violation. And she used that on Kroger's and what the DOJ put in there. So she goes, I don't know how they got that number, but that's what the DOJ referenced. So that's mm-hmm. the number. Could they do that with others? I guess, because they did it with Kroger.
Yeah. I mean, so, sounds like it set the precedent.
Yeah. But even 60, right? Even 10, what if it's $10,000 a day per violation, right?
Yeah.
That's such a big number.
Most companies.
Yeah. And they have a provision. I mean, I'm going to go down a different road here in a second about this, because I want to make it real to the technician and the contractor, yeah. and mm-hmm. not just talk about the big corporate. But the EPA has a provision not to bankrupt companies in this regulation. That's a part of their kind of charter, part of what they're commissioned to do by Congress when they set these rules in place. But what they do instead, if you're an equipment owner, as an example, is they keep the fines small, even though they could completely destroy you with the fine. And instead they make you, if you're an equipment owner, they'll make you change equipment. They'll say, hey, you haven't been responsible with your R22 systems. So we're going to make you retrofit all of them into something new, lower.
Interesting.
Yep. And so that's part of what the cost that Kroger's facing is. Instead of making them pay huge fines, they said, the fine is really tiny. For Kroger, it's $2.5 million. The $100 million is what they have to spend upgrading equipment, replacing stuff, putting in a documentation system because they're not doing it today. They're going to spend $100 million to upgrade, which is good for them. In the long run, if you think about it,
right? Over the systems, their ROI, so. They're going to save it with efficiency increases, right. Et cetera. But
so, wow. So then you go to the technician. It's the same amount. If a technician's venting refrigerant, technically they could be hit with that same 59,000 volt. And Keely did in the DOJ's thing. They listed 124. I don't know how they got to that number because this is codified stuff. But regardless, the way we see it, the way we've seen it, but up until this point, it was 59 grand. So a technician could be hit with that same thing. And of course, they're not going to bankrupt a technician either. In fact, historically, their fines have been really relatively small to technicians. We hear a lot. Well, I've never heard of them going after a technician. Not true. 2.7% of all of the violations they've issued have been against individual technicians.
Ooh.
That's not a huge percentage, but that's not zero.
No, and scale it up a little bit. That's more than two.
That's right. Yeah. Well, there's way more than 100 violations. So
yeah. And if you have more and more Ring cameras and stuff and unhappy and people just go, can you prove that hiss is a vacuum coming out or is that, or is it refrigerant leak, right? Like,
well, yeah. I mean, the Super Bowl commercial proved to us that not only can they find your dogs, they're looking at everything else now too.
That's right. So the more and more people have access to just have, you're on camera from someone's camera angle, right? And so that makes it easier for disgruntled or whatever to just make submissions and have it on camera. So
to that point, I mean, the technician carries weight. Usually what happens is the first time they get a kind of a slap on the wrist, a small fine, and that's that. That's typically what we're seeing in the historic record. But if repeat offenders lose their license, you lose your cert. So then you're out. Like you've spent your, I mean, I keep going, you know, 55 years old and this is all I've done all my life. And now I've lost the last 10 years of my working career and I have to go become a plumber or an electrician. Like I've got skills still, but I lose the thing that I do and I have to kind of start over, right? That's a pretty late game thing to have to deal with. And so that's the big deal for the technician. The contractor is more like the equipment owner. They come after the contractor, they slap them with a fine, they force them to institute documentation systems, and then they partner with you in your business for the next 3 years. They stand there and look over your shoulder, and you become business partners with the government. Yeah, it sounds awesome, right? And that's what happens.
Here's your task.
Here's your task. And they show up and they say, well, show me all the documentation for the last month. And they get into things like, how many compressor swaps did you do? Okay, cool. Now show us the recovery for every one of those.
Wow, so right, you did very granular with it.
Wow.
Like IRS level.
That's the same accounting structure. So, yep.
It's interesting. I was on a panel last week, Thursday, and the owner of a pretty large scrap company was on the panel with me. And he said, like, I've been doing this for 30 years, and I've never had an encounter until this year. I thought I was being raided and it was EPA. Like, and they're asking, where'd these units come from? They start going through who sent this to you? Where'd this go? How'd it get scrapped? What's the recovery look like? He goes, but now just looking at my stuff, they're wanting me to give them information upstream.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So
we'll flip you to get to the big, to the next,
where's the next offender? Who gives you the most of these? Where's your list of client base?
Yeah, so it was interesting because we're on a panel and part of me was like, wow, I can't believe you just said that, you know, it's out loud, right? But it was shocking because everyone thinks it's not happening. But, and then people go, oh, well, it's not going to happen under Trump. Well, he's never seen it. And it's happening like right now.
Yeah.
On a panel, he's making the announcement.
So, yeah, I mean, clearly, I mean, he worries about way more things than this. It's just, if this was happening before him, it'll happen after him. It's just part of the
when things change again, guess what? The rules were the same. They just go backwards.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's a wild deal. I mean, we try not to get a focus on this side of it as much because I think, you know, we kind of tease inside our company, FM Hero. We joke a little bit, like, we think there'd actually be more compliance in the United States if we weren't told we had to and we just focused on the financial benefit, because there's a real financial reward for doing proper recovery and 100%, documentation.
Yeah, that's actually where I was, you know, hoping to go to next, because now that we've talked about the teeth a little bit, but it is important to know that there is, that this does happen. You know, audits do happen. People do get fined and all the things. But for the bigger part of it is, I mean, geez, think about that technician in the field that's running, you know, 7 calls in a day. And, oh, well, my jug is getting low, quote unquote. I can't fill this new unit fast enough. So I'm going to go ahead and swap to him. And just like you were saying, there's 2, 3, 4 pounds left in there.
Yeah.
It ran slower, so it gets pushed aside. I need a new jug. What happened to the old one? I don't know. I've still got to keep it for who knows what, posterity. And so it ends up banging around in the van until it gets put out in the scrapyard. And that happens, multiply it by thousands of times every single day. Now we're really running into some, you know, a massive amount of refrigerant that doesn't have a home and is not being tracked.
Yep. Or a commercial rooftop, you're aging the cylinders by how sun faded they are, right? Like,
exactly.
Like there's 30 of them up there and you're like, oh, one was
nobody wants to carry their trash back down.
You're like, hey, that one still has a black handle on it. That's pre-1990, whatever it was, 6 or whatever, whenever they switched to the one-way valve. Oh, like
even crazy. I was on one time and we were started to track back by refrigerant types, not just the ages. Yeah. It's like, okay, how far back are we here now?
Yeah. There's still an R12 can up here.
Yeah, 100%.
500.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's talk about that for a second. Break it down for us. Say, you know, I'm a company. I've got, I don't know, let's take an average size company, has, call it 3 to 5 technicians in the field. What kind of monetary difference could you actually be looking at if you paid attention here?
It's fine. You'll go in there. I'll just high level it. It's significant, right? Because if you look at the margin you make when you sell refrigerant and you leave 4 pounds in a disposable, right? That adds up. You didn't sell that refrigerant, right? It just went away and you didn't document it. So now you're setting yourself up for a fine on the back end. Same thing on recovered. If you let that refrigerant go in the atmosphere, people will pay you for it. So not only do you set yourself up to be in violation, you didn't monetize it like you should to offset other costs, right? And go, so there, you're just giving up profitability, right? And you can, it doesn't take that long. I think one of the problems is people have never been taught how to properly recover, right? Well, it takes them way longer than what it should. And, you know, the Stewart brothers do a great job of going, hey, you want to make it go faster? Here's how you do it. Like, forget that's like, this is how you do it. And Jesse and Zane, they're big on that, right? And so teach them these how to do it. It doesn't take that long.
And so Jesse and Zane are with NAVAC, and they do a lot of training on just general training. It's not just about NAVAC products. They're great guys and they're shouting from the rooftops, like, recovery is required, do it. And it's not hard and it doesn't take long. So it's one of the things. They have a bunch of stuff. They do a great job. So any of you listeners who are looking for, you know, additional insights, they're fun to listen to. They're fun to talk to. Nice. But
we'll make sure you get the link in the show notes too for everybody that's listening and you want to go check them out.
Yeah. So that's who he's talking about. And they walk through how to do recovery quickly. I've done a few podcasts based on the Hero side, like, tell us how to recover faster, because that was my background. So, like, sure. So it's not that hard. So
I love it. Well, let's talk about FM Hero, because I feel like this is such a cool product that is, now that we've really gone down the road we all know we should do this. If we're anywhere in the industry at all, we can act like we don't or act like we hadn't heard it, but we know we should be recovering. We should be documenting. We should be, every time refrigerant moves in or out of an appliance, any type of appliance, we need to notate it, period. Now, the constraint has always been that paper document, et cetera. You know, who's got it on the clipboard? It just gets shredded. Nobody knows what to do anything with it. The office doesn't know what to do with it once it's, if it is filled out. So I feel like this is the biggest, it's not that the, from my experience of over 20 years in the industry, I feel like people would do it if there was an easier way. Because the barrier of entry to actually document this is so big right now without an easy way to do it. So FM Hero, tell us more about where this idea came from and the brainchild for this. And then what does it look like actually putting some, you know, fleshing it out and getting some feet to this thing?
Sure. Adam, so Hero is designed, right, to, at the end of the day, if you can, if you track your refrigerant and you control it, you can be more profitable. And when you do those things, you automatically solve the compliance side. So what needs to happen? It can't be difficult, right? You're already working in the heat, in the rain, in whatever conditions, environmental conditions you're in, right? And so putting on a piece of paper, writing all the stuff, tracking it, it doesn't work. Right? As has been proven, nothing we've done over the last 30 years has proven to get any motivation. So we knew it had to be easy. Scan feature. Everyone carries their phone everywhere they go. So you pull it out, you scan the piece of equipment, the AI reads the make, model, serial number. We trust but verify. Yep, because that's the right unit. This is the right address. And you just start tapping buttons. No typing. Like everything else out there was like a glorified spreadsheet you had to manually enter from on your phone. That sucks too, right? No one's going to do it.
And yeah, people trying to get it in the right cell, and so you expand it out, and then you miss the cells, and it ends up in bad data entry, and it's
right. And what happened is the people who did it for it, they're like, "What do we need to know?" And they go through a series of checkboxes. So you're answering questions that have nothing to do with what you're doing. They don't understand the workflow. We, from being in the field, working with contractors, working with everyone, we understood the workflow. So if you're fixing a leak, there's nothing, it's going to go through the series. It's going to go in order of what you need to do, and you're tapping buttons. We eliminated as much typing as possible. Now you can make notes, you can put stuff in there, you can make adjustments, character adjustments if you miss it. But we knew it had to be easy, and you can literally do all of the information you need to do in about a minute.
That
right?
Is
and awesome. Now you're documented. Your contractor has the right stuff, and the equipment owner can have the stuff, same stuff, because there's a single source of truth. There's no getting back to office and someone typos it, or that this one never gets entered. So now you have these gaps. So FM Hero allows a technician to be compliant in about a minute, a couple minutes on the job, right? And everyone shares the same information. Everyone's in compliance. The contractor's more profitable. The equipment owner's more profitable because they actually know what's going on as well, right? So it gets a bunch of stuff when you get into like leak loss rates, which is just changed down to 15 pounds. That's 1.5, not 5.0, like the popo. It's 1.5. So, you know, it tracks all that. We're tracking leak loss rates on everything. So that's the gist of it. How can we make this simple and actually make the workflows work so that it makes sense in the field? And look, I'm part of the guinea pig because our dev team would be like, "Oh, that is cool." I'm like, "I would never do it." Like, why? I would never do it. It doesn't matter why, I'm just telling you, right?
it's one more step that won't get done.
Yeah, exactly. So I was kind of a barrier to entry.
And to be fair, look, we say this at Rapid with recovery. So it's a very similar concept. Not recovering, using a Sawzall, is always going to be faster than recovering. Doing the right thing is not the easy road. It takes a little bit of effort. If you do it well and it becomes a system for you, it doesn't take long. So documentation, if you're not documenting, that takes less time than documenting. That's a fact. Sure. But what we found is when people start getting into the platform, first off, it matches, like Les said, it matches the workflows of the technicians in the field. So it's not hard for them to get it, because it's like, okay, I just do these three steps and, you know, scan the unit, pick the cylinder, type in how much I took out, 12 pounds, good, done. That's it. It just documented the unit. It documented the tank. It documented the refrigerant flow. We took all the extra complexity and got three data points from you. And that's all we needed. And then the rest of it is record keeping, documentation, and so on. And that's all handled by the app. You shouldn't have to do any of that. That's all stuff that should be easy. And it provides that same level of compliance, like Les said, to the equipment owner and to the contractor, so that everybody has that single source of truth. What we knew was that ultimately it all comes down to the technician standing at the unit. And if that technician isn't doing the documentation or isn't doing the recovery or isn't doing the thing, it doesn't help anybody. I mean, nobody can benefit from that. And nobody else can create the documentation because they weren't there. So it does take time. But what we've also discovered is that it doesn't take very much refrigerant before people start going, wait a minute, I gave away 10%, 20% of my pallet of gas or my can of gas.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to that disposable, because it's really, really easy to get this in your head. We had a 454B shortage last year.
I know this seems super simple. Define disposable versus not, because
realistically,
as many places as I've been, this is and I'm going to be real with everybody listening too. This is the first time I've ever heard anyone reference disposable as a refrigerant tank.
As the vessel?
In this conversation. So no one I know calls it a disposable.
Yeah, we spent too long in the reclaim space, so we're tainted by our history.
So there are
basically three categories of cylinders that we interact with in whether you're auto or HVAC space, right? If you're handling refrigerant, it comes in three packagings. One is you have a recovery cylinder. It's a refillable, reusable cylinder with closable valves that can go, refrigerant can go either direction, in and out. It's gray and yellow. Sometimes it's gray and yellow with a red band because it's A2L certified. They come in different pressure ratings. So that's a recovery cylinder. We're all familiar. Then you have refillables. Most of our industry doesn't use a refillable cylinder. Most of the rest of the world does. So our new refrigerant comes in a disposable can. We use it. It has a one-way valve. You can only take gas out of it. You can't put gas back in it. Even guys who have figured out ways to do that, it's illegal. That it's been made illegal to do that. So it's a one-way, one-time use device. And when it's fully, the EPA requires you to evacuate it. So it's supposed to go into a vacuum before you render it useless, which is also in the rules. You got to smack a hole in it, break the valve off, do something that makes it unusable. Mm-hmm. And then it can go to spray.
This is what we've typically known as the pink jug or the green jug or whatever we're using at the time, color-coded according to that.
The ones you're leaving on the roof and throwing in the dumpster, not taking the heel out of, those are disposable.
Those are disposables. And they're trying to change the colors on us now because they're like, oh, there's too many different colors. We shouldn't do it. That's the whole thing. But anyway, you got to love it. We just keep changing. Every time it gets normal, it's not normal anymore.
Right, of course.
So those are disposables. And so those things, you buy them. And we had a 454B shortage, as everybody who's in the HVAC space knows, last year. And you're getting now, back with R22, you'd get 30 pounds in a container in one disposable. And then we went to 410 and we got 25 pounds. And now we're in 454B and R32 and we get 20. So if you left 2 pounds in that compared to a 30-pounder, it's a better loss ratio. But the less they put in each cylinder, now 2 pounds out of 20 is 10%. So just by doing that alone, with no other leakage off the back of the truck, nobody stealing gas, nobody doing side jobs with your gas as a contractor, none of that, you're automatically giving up about 10% of everything you buy. And that's just a lot. And it's usable gas. I know people don't like to, but when you're paying, what were we paying last summer? 60, 80 bucks a pound sometimes for that stuff? It's wild, right? And so, I mean, you're talking about leaving 150 bucks or whatever inside of a cylinder when you get rid of it. That's
absolutely. Well, there's companies all over that, they're reselling it. The price to the client is anywhere between $200 and $300 a pound, $325, $350 sometimes, depending on the market. So holy crap, if we're leaving 2 pounds, that's $800 potentially.
$800 in revenue and $150 in cost, and you just throw it away.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So
it doesn't take much.
This is super top of mind for me because one of the things I do is help companies not only do sales training, increase their revenue on that side. We're super deep into helping a company become efficient and get rid of a lot of this waste. And most people don't realize they literally have between 15 and 20% whatever their number is, the size of their company, if you can take that gross margin line and multiply it by 15 to 20%, it's sitting in their company that should have gone to the bottom line through things like this.
Yes. So two things I want to talk about on that. One is, once you put a system in, we call it the Heroverse, it's in there. Like when you go back to that address, it's going to show up. It's already going to be on site. If it doesn't show up, you're going to add the one that wasn't added in, but it stays in there. So it's a one entry deal. The next time someone goes out there, same company, different company, that system lives in the Heroverse. It's already in there, and it'll pull up for you, and you start working. Two is, if it's to your point on the contracts, imagine you can sit at your office and see what Les has on his truck for inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or how come Les has 3 empty recovery cylinders and he hasn't turned one in for 4 months?
Yeah. Right? Red flags.
Money. Yeah. Les is costing us money, and Les is putting us in a compliance violation at the same time. Right. So when you can sit there and scan everything in and see every transaction real time, not waiting for an upload, but as they're working in the field, you can say, do we have a training issue with Les? Do we have a character issue with Les? Do we need to replace Les? Mm-hmm. We think he can go, right? So depending what it is, maybe it's new gas being sold. How come, wait a minute, that cylinder shows 10 pounds still in there. How come you're turning it in with 1 pound trying to get another one? Where'd the 9 pounds go? Right? Where'd it go? Because there's no transactions in your record showing where it went. Right? So you can start developing patterns and seeing that. And you could go in and say, hey, we noticed on your inventory, you might not be aware, but you need to come in and swap tanks tonight so you don't have to do it in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So yeah, I don't want you to end up your first call is 2.5 hours from here. Don't get there with no refrigerant.
That's right. So to your point, as you're coaching, it gives them complete view of their team inventory and what's on individuals' trucks. If I gave a cylinder to Adam, we swapped, it would transfer for everyone into his inventory and out of mine.
And oh, interesting. This is a layer deeper than in our conversation the other day about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a chain of custody. Think of it like this. It's a chain of custody every time someone touches it. And it's self-cleaning. Every time someone uses it or answers data, it cleans itself, and it's the most recent data available.
If you play that out, every cylinder that's ever entered into the Heroverse lives there. And so as it's used and transferred and moved around, you don't have to re-enter the manufacturer and the recertification date and the other things that are stamped on the side of the cylinder. So
because
that Les saves time.
Do that.
Because Les won't. And we don't require that the user does it. But some of us, like me, I'm super anal retentive about that. I'd get it and I'd be like, that's not right. And I'd adjust it. Well, from then on, the next person who gets it gets the benefit of the fact that that's my personality.
Yeah.
And so Les who...
Well, and a good operations manager or somebody that's like actually watching this would be doing the same thing.
So... You know, Les, who's not going to enter all that, he's going to enter the bare minimum, the serial number and the size of the cylinder and the type, disposable, recovery, or refillable. Mind blown. And so, you know, it's really easy. And then to Les, what we was talking about with these transfers, right? It's like the Tinder app. You swipe left and you can consolidate tanks. If you swipe right, you can pick it up from Les or pick it up from the shop or whatever. So you can transfer really easily. It had to be easy because Les and I wouldn't use it if it wasn't. We're not programmers. I'm not a programmer, but I know when I pick up an app and I go, this app sucks, do it again.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know? So and our clients do the same thing with us because, you know, this industry is kind of hard on each other. Like we hear this feature sucks, do better. It's like, okay, what exactly sucks? Let's get on a call. And we hear it, it's like, all right, cool. And then two releases later, you know, 6 weeks later, they're like, holy cow, they redid that whole thing. And so we get this feedback loop where people are shocked that we're actually listening and making it better and better. So it's really good today because we've had tens of thousands of people use it and we get feedback that says, do better. And so I tease my kids all the time, do better.
Do better.
You can do better.
You know, I love the theme here because it's, I mean, our whole industry is, well, for a long time, it's been in that place of do better. You know, we have this opportunity to be, when the standard is set so low, it's not difficult to be exceptional. And we have a responsibility, in my opinion, for all of us inside any vertical, if it's, you know, specifically HVAC we're talking about today, but anything that touches just service, we're home service at the foundation. And we have to remember that, or not necessarily home service, but, you know, plenty of the commercial sides of all the different aspects as well. But it's still service. You know, we're working for someone else to provide something that they need. And the missing piece is the humanized part of it, but also, you know, our industry can do so much better, but we've just gotten away with being, for lack of a better word, lazy.
Mediocre.
And mediocre for so long. And so I'm really excited that you guys are doing this.
Sam, we're in the service business too, right? Like even though we give our app away free to technicians, we use a paid subscription for contractors who want to manage their 2, 3, 5, 200, whatever guys, techs. And, you know, so we have paid solutions. That's how we continue to pay for the app, but it's free to technicians. And we still look at them as that technician is my client, whether he's paying me or not. I provide this tool and I'm expected to do a good job. And so we have, you know, you don't get in like Google Maps. There's not a way to say, hey, your app needs to be fixed here or do this better. But that's right embedded in our app. But so it's really easy to do it.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, so you go to your profile.
Go ahead, Les.
As I say, you go to your profile and there's a help and support button. You click that, you submit if you have an issue, it goes straight to our dev team within the app.
And we respond.
I'm actually, for everybody that's on YouTube, I'm actually looking at, I have the app. I'm looking at it right now.
Nice.
I love this. So a couple questions then. Yes. So you mentioned a couple things there, but I want to unpack it a little bit. First of all, for a company, when is the, I have a feeling I know the answer here, but when is the right, what's the right size for a company to bring this in and start training it into their team?
When you open.
One.
Yes. If you're a sole proprietor, you can do it for free, right? So you do that. Yeah. Right. If you have, you know, two techs, you want to do that too, right? You want to take control of that inventory refrigerant. You want to make sure you're being profitable. And when you do that, you solve
compliant
side. Well, when you do
this is a leading question. I wanted to get you guys into that. But so walk us through that though, because you mentioned, you know, the individual tech is so first of all, just to go way back for everybody listening, what we're talking about is an app that is available on not just in the Apple Store, but also in the Google Play Store for Android, because I happen to have Google Pixel, so I know that. And so we're talking about an app that anyone can access, and it's a free app to download. And so talk us through your tiers there. So because I'd love to hear your mindset around giving it away to the technicians.
Let me do that one. I mean, they didn't sign on to do this, right? That's not what they want to fix stuff, right? And now they're burdened with keeping all this documentation individually. And there's not a practical way for doing it. Look, I talked to a guy from the EPA, said there's not a practical way for them to do it. You're requiring them to do something. There's not a practical way. We're going to solve it and we're going to give it to them for free so that they can do it in a couple of minutes without a lot of effort and solve their problem. And they're the ones that get to be the hero at the job site and fix the unit. And we need that refrigerant to come back in, and whatever we can do to make it easier for them to do it and get them to get it back in and stay in compliance and help their company make more money. It's free for them. There's a paid version for people who want web access and stuff like that. But what you need to be in compliance is free. And that's our commitment to keep it free.
Nice.
Because they didn't sign up to have to do all that regulatory stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I know this isn't going to answer your question yet, but I'll get there. We this spring, we were at HVAC Excellence, which is ESCO's group of educators get together every year for a convention and talk about how we can do better. How do we educate the next generation, the current generation with professional development better and better? And so we're there, and that's not a sales avenue for us. This is because we believe in the future of the industry, and we want to support the educators and the entire industry, frankly, as new techs come in. And so this year we started rolling out a free version to trade schools. So we provide for free our platform to trade school programs all over the country. And then every technician who goes through, every lab that they do, they're using FM Hero as a part of the lab to document the work they're doing. So they learn how to do it practically side by side with the work they're doing. We do that with, I mean, for example, all of Lennox training centers are a part of this. They're doing it. So they've got 9 training centers in North America, a couple in Canada, I think. The rest of them are all in the U.S. And they're using it at all of those. In fact, we just found out the other day from the guy who's running that program. We were on a podcast with him and he's like, oh yeah. And we give our final through the app. And we're like, you what? So they're actually judging. That is the final, is you go do these things, you document it, and we read what you say you did in the app. And that, or, well, for them, they're getting a backend portal and all this stuff, but they're reading what you submitted through this work order platform, and they see what you did. So anyway, I just wanted to point out we're doing it because we care about the people in the field, because that's where we started, and it stinks to have this burden that then there's no way, good way to do it. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's with the new regulations, the refrigerant recovery rate has to go up because of the change of regulations, certified reclaim responsibility, right? Yeah, we haven't even touched on that stuff.
There's a huge thing there. Before we go down that road, and we'll see how Sam's going to curve us on time, because apparently we can go forever here. But to answer your original question, we have a free version to technicians. We have a paid version that technicians can get if they want extra stuff. And by the way, almost all the features are in the free version. We, like Les mentioned, you can have an online web portal, and which lets you put in things like a logo to use if you're a one-man operator. That's probably the way to go. If you have a couple of guys
on an annual subscription, it's $15 a month on an annual subscription.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
So, and then we have a paid subscription for contractors, and we have contractors who have 2 people, and we have contractors with the hundreds of people who are working inside the platform, and they can work together. And so it's an integration between the technician, the contractor, and the equipment owner. And so the last piece is we have an entire platform for people who own the equipment and have a regulatory burden too. So any of your listeners out there who are working in the commercial space and work on equipment with a circuit or circuits that have 15 pounds or more, they need to know that their clients have an obligation they're unaware of. So it's kind of incumbent on us in the industry to help educate our client about the thing they don't know anything about. Mm-hmm. So when you go on their roof and they've got a box car with 2 circuits and each one's got 30 pounds in it, that unit, both circuits are considered regulated appliances by the EPA. And there's a whole pile of stuff that they have to know and they have to do and that you have to do for them. So there's a lot there. We have, just throwing this out as a quick thing, for those of you who are like this, because we could get lost in that for an entire episode of this by itself. If you want to know more about those rules, we have 2 compliance guides on our website, fmhero.com. They're free. You know, they're not gated. You don't have to give us your email address or anything. Go on there and get those. One is aimed at the contractor to help them understand their rules and what is required of technicians and contractors. And then there's one oriented towards equipment owners, which if you're a contractor, you should read that one too, because that tells you what your customers should be requiring of you and what they have to do, which you can help them with.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and this is a huge, my brain is always like, how do we use it, this type of information, then how do we apply it? Well, how we apply that, everybody, is this is one of the easiest ways to completely differentiate yourself from everyone else, because we all know the likelihood of, say, they're getting bids and, you know, five gentlemen or ladies walking in a row and everyone talking about this is none. It's just not going to happen. And so when you're the one who comes in and says, not only can we do this work, we're here to protect you, Mr. Building Owner, Mr. Equipment Owner, Mr. Whatever, Miss Building Owner, we're here to protect you and keep you in compliance as well as us. We're a partner here. Let's have a real conversation of what this needs to look like long term. No one else speaking like that. And when you have a tool like this to ensure that it happens, wow, my brain is going in about 1,000 different directions of how this is such an awesome thing for the industry.
We have...
There's, go ahead. I was just going to talk to the contractor that came to, they're like, hey, can we buy our clients' subscriptions and we'll write in our service agreement with them, we'll pay for it, but that'll lock us in for service agreements because we're going to do it. And we're like, sure. Yes. Right? Yes, absolutely. And so they're using it as a way to secure work and keep the others out who don't know the rules and regs. They get to go in and say, hey, here's what you're aware that all the, oh no, are you getting, no, we'll pay for your subscription to manage your facility and we'll do all the work and you'll get all you'll get real time notification as we're working mm-hmm. of what's happening.
Wow.
And all the leak rates on your system.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So it's a big deal.
That turns compliance from a cost center to a profit center as a contractor. And that's particularly valuable, obviously, in the commercial side, right? So you're talking about people who have facilities and they're managing, you know, multiple pieces of equipment and need to, and they have a regulatory burden. They could try to do it in a spreadsheet. We have people, you know, say, I'm going to do it in a spreadsheet. It's like, okay. You know, you can do your accounting in a spreadsheet too, but most of us have software to do it because it's better.
The other day, and it cracked me up. I'm going to give a shout out to my buddy Christian on this one. It was a meme that floated around. It's like, well, you know, you can buy sushi at a gas station too, but I sure wouldn't advise it.
That's right.
Right? Exactly.
So there's one area here. So, I mean, this is a profit center for people. When you're, we covered a bunch of this, but rewinding the tape a little bit, we're not only tracking for you, really easy for you, but we're tracking all of the asset itself, the piece of equipment, all of the movements of refrigerant in and out of that, all the cylinders, who has them, who had them, and all the refrigerant movements in and out by whom, whatever the proper grammar is there. Somebody can correct me on that. So if I pass a cylinder less and I used, you know, maybe it's a disposable or a new term of the day, and I used, you know, a portion of it and Les takes it from my truck or I hand it to him and we swipe it in the app so it's going to him and he starts using it. It's going to show that on this date, at this time, I transferred it to Les. He now has possession of it. It'll show that I used X number of pounds and ounces out of it. It'll show what less used on. So we're tracking all of the refrigerant movements in and out of cylinders, in and out of equipment, all that. And I bring that up because ultimately this is about having the legal documentation we're required to and turning that into a profit center instead of a cost center. And then there's a last piece that Les started to go into earlier that we can at least hit a high level. And that is, I know people have heard this before, and this is going to sound like the sky is falling. And I've been in this since the 90s, and I'm going to tell you this is a different scenario. We have a major supply shortage coming, like worse than anything you've seen before. Everything else was a wave in the wave pool, and this is a tsunami. That's what we're talking about. I'm not trying to be overly dramatic, but it's a way bigger deal than the risk of you getting fined. Yeah, it's the reality. So. It's way more of a risk than getting fined. It's way more of a risk than you know, losing a few pounds here and there that, you know, is bleeding you, bleeding your company, that all of that should be enough. But I'm going to warn you, in 2029, the amount of refrigerant that we currently have to use in systems that we're installing yesterday and still sometimes today, not a lot, but there's still 410A systems being installed, right? The technology transition rule just pushed some stuff around. And so, people can be installing this equipment today. Those systems that we've installed yesterday, last year, the year before, 5 years ago, when they need refrigerant, we will have a massive shortage and they will need it. And so, and I say that because in 2029, the volume gets cut in half of what it is today. And the only way to make up the supply shortage is through recovered refrigerant going back through reclaim. And if we're not recovering, the recovery rate in the United States is 3%. It's 3%.
Ew.
So it's terrible. And so, you know, if you're like, yeah, I don't recover, I do bucket recovery, and you think this is a joke, I'm just going to flatly tell you, A, it's illegal. Don't do it. It's dumb anyway. It's just dumb. Don't do it. It's dumb. And you're cutting off the branch you're sitting on. Because mm-hmm. in 3 years, you're going to go to get refrigerant from the supplier. And if you're a 1-2-man shop, you have no negotiating authority with that supplier. You are not the big boy. You get nothing. And so you're not going to get it.
I remember when R22 more than tripled in price overnight. Mm-hmm. I watched it happen in real time and I can see it easily hitting $1,000 a jug. before it even hit, before it gets to the place of, and you can only buy one a week. Mm-hmm. And, oh, sorry, we're out.
Yep.
And that's where it's going to go. It's going to get straight up to you're out because there just isn't enough. And the people who have, what's happening right now is the wholesalers and the reclaimers are working on programs with the big boys who are paying attention, who get it. They have an inside track because they have time, mm-hmm. honestly, to think about it.
Yeah, because the rest of us are just futures. It's not like tangible micro like we deal with.
Right. Yeah. Today, I'm just trying to put food on the table. And so these guys are thinking and planning ahead. And so they're building programs where at any refrigerator they turn in, they'll be able to buy back later. And so they're kind of building a bank, so to speak, of future value that the people who aren't recovering, and even if some of the people who are and they're smaller, just aren't thinking about. So anyway, this is really important because if we don't recover, we have a major, major problem. And I'll put this into perspective one more, in one other way. If you installed a system last year that is going to be under warranty still in 3 years when this problem happens, and a compressor goes out and it's under warranty, and you go and you do whatever you're going to do with the refrigerant, vent it or not, and you take the compressor out and you go get the new compressor and you go to put it in, but you can't buy the refrigerant, there are no SNAP-approved replacement refrigerants for Forte. There are zero. It is not legal to put something else in there. You can't put 454 in there. You can't put 32 in there. If you do, that's illegal and dangerous. And what's going to happen is somebody's house is going to end up having a problem, and they're going to have a fire or something else. I'm not the big doom and gloomer. This stuff isn't nearly as dangerous as everybody makes it out to be. But the reality is it's illegal. And guess who they're going to come after?
It's just not going to work
and
right.
Blaine. Yeah. It won't work right. So I just be careful, guys. We got to get this stuff recovered. We got to do a better job. And if we don't, we're kind of, like I said, we're cutting off the branch we're sitting on right now. Yeah. We won't get the product.
Just go punch yourself in the groin, right? Yeah.
It'll feel better.
Yeah. It will feel better than that. Because, I mean, like I said, I remember when that happened. I mean, the company I was at the time, the owner, he was... He had to go buy an extra 30 pack that day because the day before he was literally on the phone with the supply house to order for the old price for this is R22. When the change happened, he was on the phone with the supply house to order a full pallet. Got sidetracked, ended up, I'll just call him tomorrow. The very next day when he called, it had gone up by, it was just over double. And so our $7,000, $7,500 pallet of R22 was now $15, which was not budgeted for, because why would it be? And so that's a small taste of what's coming. But, so,
you know, and coming up to that is that was back in our Rapid days, right? So I was already going around talking to contractors, doing meetings, saying, hey, look, and if you want price stability mm-hmm. and availability, you need to start recovering more refrigerant and sending it in. We did that pitch for 2 years because we knew it was coming, and that's nothing compared to what's coming.
And it's different because 22 had two advantages. One, there were a bunch of SNAP approved replacement gases.
Yeah,
that's a big deal. We're allowed to put. Yep, had all these drop-ins. And two, there were big systems that used 22 chillers, refrigeration systems, and so on that were being actively retrofitted by the, particularly in the grocery space. They had big, you know, racks with 1,200, 1,500, 2,000 pounds in them. And they were retrofitting those out. So they're sucking out the R22 and they were putting in 407 or whatever, right? They're putting in other gases. And so as the 22 came out, it was going back to reclaim and was made available. Mm-hmm. If 410A, there aren't big 410A chillers out there. There aren't refrigeration racks that use 410A. So what it's, the only source is those small units that we all work on every day, those rooftop units, those home units, like that's where it's coming from, or it's
not. That's where all the refrigerant is. I had a guy tell me the other day, he's like, yeah, they told me about R11, that about R11 too, but I can still buy it today. I'm like, yeah, because someone recovered it and sent it to a reclaimer. That's the only reason.
That's how it got
By the end of our conversation, he's like, well, I think you're right. There's going to be a problem. There might be a problem.
Well, since you guys are so in, have such a knowledge of the refrigerant space, and I'm glad you do, and thank you for being on the show. We got to land this plane here in a second, but I'd love to take a quick little detour. Looking into the future, because there are zero drop-ins for 410, and like looking ahead, what do you, is, I mean, obviously somebody's going to develop something. So I remember two things happened because I want to talk about this and what the implications of this. Two things happened with the R22 when it went away and we turned to 410 and all of the shortages and the step down and all of that. One is I remember some of the, because I'm in Texas, we have access. I remember getting phone calls from companies that say, hey, we've got a new 18-wheeler that just came up from Mexico. How many do you want? Part two to this conversation is all of the drop-ins that became available, even that didn't exist before. So I'm curious to know y'all's perspective and your take on two sides of this. One is, you know, that level of availability, because this is a hard topic episode. Like, this is something no one's talking about that we have to talk about. So one, and this is also what people are thinking. It's like, oh, I'll just buy it from off the back of the truck. One, like, what do you think the likelihood of that is? Two is, I mean, we've got 2.5 years. Some chemist somewhere is eyeballing this sucker going, what would it take to develop a drop-in? And do you think that the potential for that and what's the likelihood of that to happen between now and then as well?
Les, you want to take the illegal imports?
Yeah.
Because you got a great story about that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I do. That's going back a while, I'll get there. But there's regularly, I see counterfeit refrigerant fines coming out pretty regularly. I mean, they're watching it way closer than they're watching it back then. There's no quality control. So you're likely have issues. You know who's selling, right? Buy your steak from the guy in the supermarket parking lot instead of the supermarket, right? That's kind of what we're doing, sushi at the gas station. I had a guy a long time ago call me up when 12 was really expensive. And he said, hey, this stuff's not working right. And you have a tester, right? I said, yeah. So I went over there and I drew a sample. I'm like, yeah, this is R22. But they were all white jugs. They had labels on them, right? He goes, where'd you buy it? He goes, a guy in a station wagon. That had a good deal. Well, he went out of it. He didn't need it anymore. He gave me a great deal. I'm like, yeah. I took one of those cans. I scraped it under the asphalt and it was green underneath. So someone just went out and bought a bunch of R22 for back when it was like $1 a pound back then, right? Yeah. Spray painted white.
I remember in flats would fill our tires with it.
Yep. Printed labels and put it on there. And R12's worth, you know, $12-$14 a pound. And this guy's getting a good deal because he's paying seven, half the price.
Mm-hmm.
So he paid $7 a pound for R22. Right? So, you know, you can do what you want. You can make bad choices all day. Bad choices is why we're here. And the people who are going to make bad choices are going to buy their refrigerant off the back of a truck who's got a great deal for you.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you told that. Because, and, you know, that's such a valuable lesson that, you know, I have a feeling that, you know, one of the companies I was at, we came across a little bit of that. Because we were having some issues and it wasn't the prettiest for a little bit. Until we've made it through that amount of jugs that we got,
right? Because how do you think he figured out it was it wasn't working right? He had put it in systems that weren't working, and he had to go back out and fix them. Yeah. Too. Like,
oh, yeah, it was a horrible drain.
Snowball effect.
Yeah, for sure. So, for everybody listening, no, this is not an admission of guilt, but I'm telling stories from my past in the field. I don't know.
I won't share any of those. I know these are recorded.
Right. This is the blooper.
Now, you're going to cover the snap approval?
Yeah. No, yeah, I chalked it all up to when we didn't know it was one thing, but now that we know, we can do better.
Right. That's right. On the other side of the question, you know, that covers imports. Les did mention there's a lot more oversight on every import, and people, there's stories out of a guy out of Georgia, I think it was, who was illegally importing refrigerant and knew, and his employees said, hey, are we allowed to do this? I thought there was a rule. And he said, I don't care. We're doing it anyway. It's a quarter of the price, whatever. And he ended up getting fined and getting shut down. They actually just, he's out, he's off, he's done. His business is closed.
Pulled the license and everything. Yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, you know, so that's legit. Mm-hmm. On the other side, there are refrigerants currently in process for SNAP approval. So that will help if they get approved. There just aren't any yet. We were talking with some of the folks over at ASCO the other day, and they were asking about one because they did a podcast and they And somebody, they made the comment, there are no SNAP approved refrigerants for this. And somebody said, no, there are. See here. And they sent them a website. And on that company's website, it says that they are SNAP approved. So we dug in, ESCO dug in. We cannot find that. So we've now got a petition, or we. ESCO's asked the EPA to verify. And if it's real, then where is it? Because we can't find it in the SNAP registry. So even that, just because somebody says it's legitimate, scrape it on the pavement and check, because, you know, dig a little deeper, dig a little deeper to find out if it's real. But we know of some real, I mean, I'm not saying that they're not legit, that could be legitimate, but, we also know some real legitimate companies that are in the process that have started their petition in 2020. So they're 6 years in and it's not approved yet.
Still not.
And
approved.
There's no reason. It's not like it's bad gas or it's like a bad, it's like, there's no reason. Like, I mean, these are legit guys who are good at what they do. They make good products and they've been waiting now.
They haven't paid enough money to lobby the politicians yet.
That's right. Not in Greece.
That's
a whole different conversation.
Yeah. So the timeline, right? Just because people are like, oh, it's coming out, it's coming out. Mm-hmm. 6 years hasn't come out by people who know what they're doing and know the process. And who knows what the delay is, but it's not anyone that tells you that something's right around the corner. They're just guessing.
Yeah.
You need to prepare for the long haul.
And that's really just a Band-Aid to the bigger problem, which is do it right to start with, which is what we're talking about here today.
If refrigerant was coming back in, we wouldn't even have the conversation.
The recovery rates were
sitting at 35, 40%. We wouldn't be having this conversation if they'd been at that rate for the last 10 years.
Japan runs a 44% recovery to reclaim rate. It's one of the highest in the world. And so we're not looking to get to like 100%, because there's gases that, like, I don't know, those little inhalers, medicine inhalers, they have refrigerants in them. And so that's a one-time use propellant. So the propellants count for this too. And so, you know, there is some amount of gas that won't come back. But the thing with those is they've changed them already. So they're not using up the allotment for 410A. So we are the only solution for our problem is ourselves. We have to do the recovery, and it will help. It will make a difference. And of course, we do need some SNAP approved replacements to help. And we do need, like, it's going to take a lot of things, not just one, but the biggest one is recovery. It's the easiest one to do and fix. So
mm-hmm. I love it, guys. Recovery and just being efficient. Stop wasting stuff.
That's right.
Stop throwing it away. It is insanely valuable. People aren't tracking it. So love it, guys. Well, thanks for being on. For everybody, it's been a pleasure, gentlemen, chopping it up with y'all. Thanks for going a little long today. God, there's so much to cover in this topic, though. When we really get under the hood, it's like there's just so many. And like you said, there's five different ways that we could go and take up another hour on each one, because they are important. They are an integral part of anything that touches refrigerant. So like I mentioned at the beginning, everything from automotive to appliance to HVACR, you know, all the refrigeration that happens, big commercial, all the residential, every bit of it. And so it touches our lives every single day, no matter what component of that we're in, and we've got to do better. And so, like you said, do better. And so that applies to all of us. It takes a village to really turn the ship around. And, you know, we're in one of those industries that it's such a big, old, slow-moving vessel. It takes so long to turn. And I'm really at the, well, there's a handful of topics that need addressed in our industry that I'm to the place where if we don't start moving faster, the regulations are going to hammer us so hard, no one's going to like it. And we're running out of time so fast. And so I thank you for being on the show today.
Absolutely.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
If I can get it real quick, every ounce counts, right? Get every ounce. It's not the 10 pounds, it's the ounces. Get it all back in. That'll help. Thanks to Gail with FTL Finance for introducing Sam and I. Got a conversation going. And then if you're out there, we at FM Hero, we want to be a resource to you. We got free compliance guides, client or not.
Yeah, give them all the ways to get a hold of you, all the ways to get in contact, all the things.
Yeah, I just don't want any, don't think, oh, I don't use them, so I can't call them. We're a resource for you. reach out. We'll be happy to answer questions for you.
Okay. Give everybody all the contact information again.
fmhero.com.
And for everybody listening, FM Hero, that is, stands for?
Facilities Management Hero.
Facilities Management Hero. There is no space. Own, FM Hero.
You can choose your hero name.
That's right.
And I recommend everybody just go in your app store and just go grab the app and just download it. It's free. Play with it. Check it out. Look at it. Get it in your hands and see how smooth and easy it is to use. I'm really excited because the next time that I do an on-site training, I plan to incorporate it into my ride-alongs and start using it directly. That way I can have the experience with it. Then I can train it forward into the companies I'm training because it's such an important thing. So, well, thanks for being on FM Hero, everybody. Go get your app and also the links that we talked about. Those are going to be in the show notes. So for everybody listening, you're in your Drive Time University. Don't run off the road. Just open up the show notes. Check out the link from there. And thanks to Les and Adam with FM Hero. You guys are true heroes of the industry right now and making a difference. So appreciate you being on.
You've been listening to the Close It Now podcast. Our passion is to dive headfirst into the transformative movement that's reshaping the very foundation of HVAC and home improvement, and at the same time, covering fitness, nutrition, relationships, and personal growth, proving that we can indeed have it all. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, find the website at closeitnow.net. Find us on Instagram at The Real Close It Now and on Facebook at Close It Now. See you next time.